Blog Talk Radio.
In the world to the Los Angeles Lakers,
And just maybe it was just too much too fast. And I was thinking, I didn't think too much. I didn't think too much of it that the deal, that this deal, that the things that would go behind this deal. So then you come to find out a couple hours later and into Friday morning that the owners, basically strong-armed David Stern into calling this deal off. And it began with Dan Gilbert, owner of the Cleveland Cavaliers. Gilbert, who, writes this letter, and I have it here right in front of me here, writes this passionate letter on why this trade shouldn't be made. And I'll read it right here. I'll read it to you right now. I cannot ever remember. It begins like this. It would be a travesty to allow the Lakers to acquire Chris Paul in the apparent trade being discussed. This trade should go to a vote of the 29 owners of the Hornets. Over the next 3 seasons, this deal would save the Lakers approximately $20 million in salaries and approximately $21 million in luxury taxes. That $21 million goes to non-tax-paying teams and to fund revenue sharing. I cannot ever remember seeing a trade where a team got by far the best player in the trade and saved over $40 million in the process. It doesn't appear that they would give up any draft picks, like NBA draft picks that count for a damn these days, which would allow to later make a trade for Dwight Howard. They would also get a large trade exception that would improve their team and eventually or eventually trade for Howard. When the Lakers got Paul Gasol, at the time considered an extremely lopsided trade, they took on tens of millions of dollars in additional salary and luxury tax, and they gave up a number of prospects, one in Marc Gasol, who may become a max salary player. I just don't see how we can allow this trade to happen. I know the vast majority of owners feel the same way I do. When will we just change the name of the 25 of the 30 teams to the Washington Generals? Now, first of all, and this is where Dan Gilbert is kind of short-sighted. He's right. Well, I'm just extremely just, taken back of how he knows the Lakers' economics just frontwards and backwards. And he's owner of Cleveland Cavaliers. Like, he knows the Lakers, the luxury, I mean, how much they're going to save in luxury taxes, how much they're going to save in salaries. I'm like, geez, dude, who are you working for? Do you own the Cavaliers, or are you a Laker accountant? But what he failed to mention is, number one, what the Lakers gave up a all-star, all-NBA player in Paul Gasol and a borderline all-star and one of the most versatile players in the league in Lamar Odom. Basically gave up outside of Andrew Bynum, gave up their front court. What he also failed to mention is that the Lakers, when they do get Chris Paul, and I still think that this trade is going to go through, they're going to have to sign Chris Paul, extend Chris Paul to probably a 4 or 5 year contract in excess worth of $100 million. Okay. And the third and most important thing that he left out of this was the fact that this does not by any means guarantee the Lakers getting Dwight Howard. Now, personally, do I think that the Lakers were going to get Dwight are going to get Dwight Howard and we're going to get Dwight Howard, especially with this trade, had this trade been going through immediately? Yes, I personally do believe that, and I personally believe that's the grand scheme. But you know what? It's called good business. And I mean, Dan, listen, Lakers have won 16 championships for a reason. I mean, if you do you go into business to lose money or to make a profit? I mean, this is competitive in sports. This is competition. I don't get like. You're in it to win, not to lose. Of course, the Lakers are going to try to make the best move possible. And again, a lot of people, after when this trade was initially made, we're not killing the Lakers, but we're questioning, like, okay, the Lakers are taking a big risk here, considering they got Chris Paul, they got Kobe Bryant. What about their front court? Like, Ron Artest was going to be a starting power forward, which I don't think ever was going to occur. And I said it on Thursday. That roster that the Lakers would have had would not have been their starting roster. It would not have been the same roster they had on Christmas Day I still think the Lakers had other moves in mind to make once this went through. But the bottom line is, you know, Dan Gilbert, again, has not gotten over LeBron James. He has, you know, he's become an irritant. You know, the guy, he has something to say on everything. Dan Gilbert was not singing this tune when he had LeBron James. I didn't hear him, putting it, coming out there and defending small market ownership owners and defending small market teams when LeBron James was on the team. I didn't hear that at all. Or when he took on the salary of Antoine Jameson. Nobody, or when he gave Mo Williams, $40 million. Nobody talked about it. He didn't talk about it then. When he loses LeBron James, now he's the voice of the people for in terms of a small market. David Stern, you know, has just become, and, you know, this lockout really showed to me Stern, what Stern has become as far as a bully, you know, somebody who has to get his way. I mean, Stern, you know, how do you tell a player you can't go here? I mean, that's borderline unconstitutional. You tell a player, the player wants to go to another team, wants to be traded because he wants to get out of a city that has no future in basketball. New Orleans will not have a basketball team in maybe a year or two, 2 years max. They don't have basketball in New Orleans. It's not a basketball town. That's all it is to it. So, you know, David Stern, you know, cuts his nose to spite his face. You're trying to sell this franchise, yet you will how you're going to try to sell this franchise without Chris Paul? Chris Paul is not going to be on the team 2012-2013. Guaranteed. He's a free agent after this year. He's not re-signing there. He's made that evident that he's not re-signing there. So much so that the general manager of the Hornets, Dale Demps, you know, basically, you know, when this deal was shot down, threatened to quit. He had to be talked out of quitting his job. He was so distraught over this deal being shot down. This is a great deal. This is a great deal for the Hornets. To be honest with you, I've never seen a team give up a traded superstar and get more in return than what the Hornets would have gotten. And trust me, I'm a Laker fan. I saw what they got when they traded for Shaquille O'Neal. And it didn't come close. I mean, the Hornets get, you know, they get Lamar. They would have got Lamar Odom. They would have gotten, you got Lamar Odom. You would have gotten, as I look at the Louis Scola. You've gotten Kelvin Martin, Gordon Dragic, who is not a throw-in, by the way. Gordon Dragic did have 23 points in the playoff game against the San Antonio Spurs a couple years ago. First-round pick in 2012 that is unprotected, that is protected in terms of top five. Anything outside of top five, you know, this 2012 draft is going to be a very deep draft. Later on in the program, I'll tell you why Stern has to go, and we'll certainly talk more NBA. I believe this deal is going to go through. I believe the NBA is going to be. Everybody's killing the NBA about this deal. Media, fans, everybody. They're going to reverse this deal. They don't want to get into any litigation. Chris Paul will sue. They'll go through the union, sue the NBA. So I don't think they want to. I don't think there's a fight that the NBA wants to go through. Leading up to Christmas Day when the season begins. I believe this trade will go through. They're already opening in talks right now. We have reopened talks right now. So we'll see what happens. Again, to me, a good trade for everyone, you know, doesn't guarantee anything for the Lakers. New Orleans gets back almost close to being equal value, and Houston gets Paul Gasol. So I thought it would have worked out for everyone, all parties involved. When we return on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call, we will have Saturday morning headlines. 347-215-6180 is your call number. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Thank you. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, of course, taking you for the next up to 1 o'clock as we discuss the world of sports. Hope everybody out there is enjoying the holiday season. Got some Christmas shopping done, a couple of things. I mean, I'm about a third of the way through. Can't beat online shopping. I'm telling you right now, it makes you lazy. But there's so many deals online, it's ridiculous. It really is. And I'm not gonna give any names out. Nobody's paying to be on this show, so there'll be no free advertising on the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call until they start, forking out some dollars. But listen, all you gotta do is go on the internet. The sites will find you. They will find you. So anybody who receives a gift from me, there's about a 99.5% chance that it came from online, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I'll take an online gift. I'll take any gift that you're willing to give to me. Saturday morning headlines. Former AAU CEO Bobby Dodd has been accused of sexually molesting two former players. Dodd, of course, ran an AAU program out of Memphis, featured some of the players like, Penny Hardaway, Vincent Askew. This went on in the 80s. He's, of course, been released from that position. They have an interim person, who has taken over that position. And, again, ever since the Joe Paterno, the Jerry Sandusky thing has come out of Penn State, that, of course, involved Joe Paterno. These things have been coming out of the woodworks left and right. I mean, you have Bernie Fine. You have, what happened with the Red Sox. It's every week, at least once. You're bound to hear at least one sexual molestation case coming out a week. It's crazy. It really is. It's hard to describe. It is very hard to describe. The thing that I'm concerned with is, and I'm glad it's coming out because, that is something that should never be kept a secret. And you want the offenders if they're guilty to go to jail and to justice to prevail. But did it take? Penn State, something like that, the magnitude of the Penn State case for everybody to come out now and say, hey, I was sexually abused, I was sexually molested. And it's really unfortunate that it took something like that of that magnitude for all these cases to come out. I mean, how long were they going on? How many years were these secrets being kept before this whole Penn State case broke? And you wonder, if the Penn State case never would have came about, would any of these cases come to the forefront? Former Portland Trailblazers guard Brandon Roy has decided to retire. Roy, just 27 years old, cites he has knee problems and degenerative knees in both knees. He has two bad knees. Roy, at one point in his career, was one of the rising stars in the NBA. There was a period, about a 2 or 3 year period, where I thought Roy, was a top 15, borderline being on a top 10 player. And outside of Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade was the best two guard in basketball. Very unfortunate. Portland just cannot catch a break if their lives depended on it with these injuries. Even going back to the days of, with Sam Bowie, recently it's just been, they've been cursed. And let's be honest with you, with Greg Oden and now Brandon Roy. And again, they're going to amnesty Brandon Roy, and it won't count against his salary cap, but he still has to get paid his money. That money is guaranteed. And again, unfortunate, just an unfortunate loss for the Portland Trail Blazers and the NBA. Roy, again, was one of the premier two guards in the league, and was a good guy off the court. I mean, you never heard about him getting in any trouble. You remember, he came along during that particular time where Portland was trying to change their reputation. They were, you know, for all those years, they were called the Jailblazers. Fans, community got annoyed with it, got tired of it, stopped going to the games. And that's a great, that is a tremendous basketball city. I mean, Portland, Rip City, all those years, that is a great basketball city. But it got to a point where the fans were like, listen, enough's enough. They revamped their image. Nate McMillan's a very good coach, brought in some good players, some good young talent, but they just can't keep those guys healthy. I mean, I don't know what it is. It's just a case of bad luck, but he is out. Brandon Lloyd is retired as a Portland Trailblazer. Jim Moore has been named head coach of the UCLA Bruins. He takes over for the recently fired Rick Neuheisel. Moore, you remember, coached the Atlanta Falcons from 2004 to 2006, made the playoffs in the NFC Championship in his first year, but struggled the last 2 years, going 8-8, 7-9. I believe what drove, besides those, you know, he was only one game under 500 his last 2 years. I've seen coaches hang around a lot longer with a lot worse of a record. He made a comment, and I believe, you know, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, he made a comment during his last year with the Falcons that he was basically flirting with the University of Washington job. And I believe that got him the boot. So he's back in college football. We'll see what he does. Listen, despite the fact that USC will always be USC, even when they're on probation in terms of the state of California, there's enough talent there in the state of California and on the West Coast in general where UCLA should be much better than what they are. I mean, UCLA should be a, you know, 8-4, 9-3 program. They should be in a major bowl every year. Not some years they should be in a New Year's Day bowl. Some years they should be competing for a Pac-12 championship. I mean, listen, they have, again, all the resources are there. They had the basketball program to kind of lean on in some aspects. No excuse for UCLA to be a mediocre football program. So we'll see what Jim Moore can come in there and do as he tries to change the culture of that particular program. 53 minutes after 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. When we return, we will have the Redskin Report. Remember, we also have Week 14 NFL Picks, Fantasy Focus, who to sit, who to start. We have a lot of baseball to talk about, big week in baseball, especially in the city of Los Angeles and down in Miami, and Heisman Trophy. A lot to do on this program as we discuss the world of sports. We'll be right back. When you walk through the garden, gotta watch your back. Well, I beg your pardon, walk the straight and narrow track. If you walk with Jesus, he's gonna save your soul. Can I keep a devil? Fire and the fury at his command. Well, you don't have to worry if you hold on to Jesus' hand. I'll be safe from Satan. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call as we discuss the world of sports. Redskin Report. Redskins are hosting the New England Patriots this week. Redskins, Patriots are rolling at 9-3, trying to chase a they had the divisions wrapped up. They're going to win the division easily. They're trying to chase a AFC first seed as they battled the Steelers, Ravens, and surprisingly, despite all the injuries, the Houston Texans for that number one seed in the AFC. And I'm kind of glad as a Redskins fan that the Patriots are coming in, because hopefully, you know, Daniel Snyder can see what a real organization looks like and how the team – and it's not going to happen, but how they just conduct themselves, how, you know, how the Patriots have been built. The Patriots have been everything the Redskins have not. When you look at how consistent the Patriots have been over the last – since Bill Belichick and Tom Brady came together in that 2001 season with Brady taking over for Drew Bledsoe when he got hurt against the Jets. The Patriots have been, you know, the it franchise in the NFL with the 3 Super Bowls, you know, all the 11-win seasons they've had, having, you know, at least 3 14-win seasons. They have been the model of consistency, and this year is no different. They're going to win, you know, 12 or 13 games this year, and, you know, despite what they looked like earlier. And early in the season, I looked at the Patriots, and I said, there's no way that this team can get to the Super Bowl. And I still don't think they can. They will get to the Super Bowl, but you have to put them up there as a team that has a chance to get to the Super Bowl, because Brady is that good, and their defense has really played well over the past couple of weeks, you know, forcing turnovers. Yes, they give up a lot of yards, but they have not given up a ton of points. Somehow they've piecemealed that secondary together. Belichick has done a tremendous job with that. And most importantly, Belichick made the adjustment. They made the adjustment offensively to become more run-oriented. Early in the season, you know, was Brady throwing 40 times, and they would run the ball, you know, 18, 19 times. They would run the ball just to give his arm a rest. Now, over the last 5 to 6 weeks, and I think it probably started with that Buffalo game that they lost, they've really had a lot. They've really tried to get balance in their offense with running, in terms of running the football. Ben Jarvis Green having a very good season. I know if you look at his yards per carry, and that doesn't blow you away, but he does have 8 touchdowns. And again, they run the ball. It's not so much the production in terms of the yardage that they get. Look at the carries. I mean, Brady will throw the ball 35 times. They'll run the ball 31, 32 times. And that makes their passing game that much more effective. Right now, Rob Gronkowski, if not the best tight end in football, certainly right there behind Jimmy Graham. He's been tremendous. He's basically setting the records for how many touchdown receptions for a tight end in his first couple of seasons. They'll go to him. They'll go to Aaron Hernandez. Deion Branch, there's somebody to me to keep an eye on in this game, because with all the focus going towards those tight ends, he could have some big plays. He can make some big plays against that Redskins secondary, which will be missing one, Laron Landry, who will be out for the 5th time this season. Again, this is because if you're a Redskins fan, this will be a very concern if you're a Redskins, part of that Redskins organization, of Laron Landry being able to stay on the field. And why he is not able to be able to stay on the field over the course of his career. It seems like he's always hurt. And, you know, he's been okay this year. He hasn't been great, but he's been okay this year. Not having this good, certainly not having the type of year that he was having before he got injured last season. So that's something that would be a concern for the Redskins. Also, the Redskins, you know, the big news for Redskins this week, of course, was the suspensions of one Fred Davis and also Trent Williams for using a recreational drug, smoking weed, and they were suspended for the rest of the season. Now, listen, do not dismiss that. Dismiss this as the mistake you will make will be to dismiss this as, you know what, Redskins are 4-8. They're not going to the playoffs. No big deal. This is a big deal. And it's a big deal because you have two young players who are still trying to find their way in the NFL, okay? 4 games is not, you know, it's not like, first of all, missing 1 game is a lot in the NFL. There's only 16 of them. So you're talking about missing 4 games, that's a quarter of the season. And to me, that retards the growth, for lack of a better term, of a player, especially a player who is not yet established. Neither one of these guys are established. They're still trying to find their way. They're still improving or trying to improve. Fred Davis was having a career year, and he picked the worst time to do this on a contract year. At that, Trent Williams was starting to show signs, you know, that of him being the number one pick of the Redskins, you know, a couple of years ago. or in 2010, I should say. He now, you know, that this, I mean, this hurts the Redskins. This hurts these two guys to miss four games. You know they can't. I mean, that don't dismiss this as just, you know, this, again, as a season, as just another, you know, the season's over. That would be, you know, that would be a mistake if you're a Redskins fan. This is definitely a big deal. Williams is going to be back. Listen, you don't draft a guy, left tackle, number one pick, excuse me, yeah, right tackle, number one pick. You don't draft him and just say that, you know, get rid of the guy because of this. Fred Davis is another story, though I still think Fred Davis will be back based on the fact that how productive he had been during the course of this season. And his market value is not going to be as – he's going to be a restricted free agent. So when he hits the market, his market value will not be as high as it was before this incident took place. So I expect both of those guys to be – I mean, Trent Williams definitely, but I expect Fred Davis to be back in 2012. Again, the Redskins are up against it tomorrow afternoon in FedEx. The one thing they will have going for them, well, two things. Number one, the Patriots defense – you can throw on the Patriots defense, and you can gain yardage on the Patriots defense. That's one. The second thing is the field. They're going to play the Army-Navy game this afternoon at FedEx. That field is going to be in awful shape tomorrow when the Redskins and Patriots go at it, and which probably could be an advantage for the Redskins. I mean, the uglier the game is, the Patriots are going to throw the ball. The uglier the game is, you know, maybe this slows down the Patriots. You know, if, like I said, if it's an ugly game, that favors the Redskins. Patriots want, you know, efficient. They want to go up and down the field. They want precision. They, you know, that is what the Patriots are from an offensive standpoint. So maybe, you know, the field will be a blessing in the sky for the Washington Redskins, as they're going to need all the help they can get to knock off the New England Patriots. Andre Carter comes back to FedEx, comes back to FedEx, having a great season with the Patriots. He really is. Nine sacks. I know he had about four of them in one game on a, I think it was a Sunday night game. I believe it was against the Jets. He had a huge, that Sunday night game against the Jets a few weeks back, had a huge game. But regardless, he's had an excellent season with the Patriots. So we'll see what happens with that. Again, the Redskins, that is a tough task to catch this team right now the way they're playing. Patriots notoriously have been great in December, Belichick and Brady, so we'll see what happens with that. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we will get into the Heisman Trophy. Of course, that'll be on tonight. Who is deserving of the Heisman Trophy, who I think should win it versus who I think will win it, and also we'll try to break down the true meaning of the Heisman Trophy, try to figure it out. I haven't figured it out for the last 20 years, so we'll try to do that in basically 5 or 10 minutes. We'll be right back. 6 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 10th day of December 2011, basically just 2 weeks away from Christmas. Remarkable how quick Christmas comes around. You know, once you hit Thanksgiving or hit the month of November, it, you know, comes even that much quicker. So looking forward to that certainly in the next couple of weeks. Big time sports month. You know, you had the NBA starting off Christmas Day. NFL will certainly be at the tail end, going playoff races, you know, the college basketball, still have some hot stove baseball. So December is a great sports month to end the year. And one of the last major events before the bowl season starts will be tonight down in New York for the Heisman Trophy presentation. Of course, the Heisman Trophy, of course, you have Trent Richardson, Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin III, Monte Ball, and Tyrann Mathieu, all your candidates. I'll say this first. Number one, Tyrann Mathieu has no business even being invited to New York. And I'm going to tell you why. It has nothing to do with him as a player. He's a great player. He's going to be a superstar, I think, in the NFL in the mold of a Patrick Peterson, and some of the, you know, other cornerback, secondary people that LSU has produced over the years. He was suspended, okay, for a game against Auburn this year for off the field incident. Okay, Peter Ward back in 1999, who should have won the Heisman Trophy in 1999, was suspended for an off the field incident, allegedly taking some money from boosters and some of that effect of that ilk, suspended a game and didn't get invited to New York. You're the Heisman Trophy, you want to be, you know, it's fine, you know, be consistent. And I haven't heard anybody bring that up. Again, as a player, this guy single-handedly basically won two games for LSU going down the stretch against Arkansas and also against Georgia with the plays that he made. I'm not questioning him as a punt returner, as a playmaker. He's a great player. And from a defense standpoint, he deserves to be invited there. But, listen, you can't have a guy being invited who's been suspended, you know, who's been suspended because of a NCAA, basically a borderline NCAA violation. Now, the NCAA, LSU suspended him before the NCAA got to it. Okay, this was LSU basically policing themselves if they don't do it, then the NCAA probably would have looked further into it. Now, it wasn't that serious to where this could, you know, damage the, you know, LSU chances at a national championship here and into the future. But the bottom line is he was suspended for an off-the-field incident. He still gets invited. So, I guess if you want to be technical about it, you can say, well, the NCAA, I believe that the Peter Ward situation, the NCAA might have suspended him for that particular game. This case, Mathieu wasn't suspended by the NCAA. The bottom line is they were suspended a game, and they still, and again, the Heisman people still invite him to New York. So, I don't think he should be there myself, and also think I think Matt Barkley should have got that fifth spot anyway, myself. I think USC had a great year. I'm not punishing Matt Barkley for what Reggie Bush did and for what Pete Carroll didn't do as far as, you know, policing his program. Barkley, to me, was one of the five best players in college football this season. He should have got the invite over Tyrann Mathieu. But when you look at the Heisman, again, college football has to give me a clear definition of what the Heisman is. As far as, you know, how do they gauge the winner? Is it most valuable player? Is it most outstanding player? Is it player who's projected to be the best pro? The Heisman Trophy does not have a clear definition of the award, in my opinion. And because, you know, guys get penalized because of, you know, they don't win a big game, or they, you know, how good their team goes. My personal opinion, I gauge it on who was the best player in college football, period. Who was the best player in college football? And as a tiebreaker, I will use how those players played in the biggest of games against the higher ranked teams. That's the tiebreaker you use, as far as I'm concerned. And to me, it narrows down to two players, as far as I'm concerned. And one of them does, and they do not include Andrew Luck. I've narrowed it down to Monte Ball, and RG3, Robert Griffin III. Monte Ball, okay, look at his numbers. Monte Ball scored 39 touchdowns. He scored 39 touchdowns. Here's what he did against ranked opponents, teams who were ranked at the time. Against Nebraska, when they killed Nebraska, Nebraska was ranked, I believe, 11 at that particular time. Oh no, let me get that right. Nebraska was ranked 8th at that particular time. He had 30 carries for 151 yards, 4 touchdowns. Against Michigan State, who in the first Michigan State game, Michigan State was ranked 16th. The game was at Lansing. He had 18 carries, 115 yards, a touchdown. In that course, they had 37-31 loss where the kid catches the ball in the last second with the Hail Mary. Against Penn State at home, when they killed Penn State 45-7, he went 25 for 156, 4 touchdowns. And, of course, last week against Michigan State in the Big Ten Championship, they got that put Wisconsin in the Rose Bowl. He went for 27 carries, 137 yards, 3 touchdowns. I mean, you'd be hard pressed. From a statistical standpoint, he is the most impressive player in college football. 32 rushing touchdowns, 39 touchdowns total, almost 1,800 yards rushing in a big time conference, in the Big Ten, in a relatively strong conference. Playing, you know, I know the Big Ten doesn't play great non conference competition, but the Big Ten was good this year. It's hard to argue against. You look at RG3 against Oklahoma State. Now, they lost Oklahoma State, but Oklahoma State was ranked number 3 at the time. 33 of 50, 425, a touchdown, 2 interceptions. Against Oklahoma, they beat Oklahoma when Oklahoma was top 5. 21 of 34, 479, 4 touchdowns. Had 18 carries for 72 yards rushing. Against Texas Christian, that really put them on the map this year in one of the opening games of the season, they won the game 50-48, 21-27, 359, 5 touchdowns. Against Texas was ranked 22nd. He went for 15-22, 320, 2 touchdowns and interception. Also had 2 rushing touchdowns. So to me, it comes down to those two, and I give RG3 the edge because RG3 has nothing around him. I mean, he doesn't have any named players around him. He has pretty good receivers, but no real running game. Monte Ball had Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, if not for couple of losses that Wisconsin suffered, probably would have been on this list as well. He had a great year. So from that standpoint, I give RG3 the credit, but neither one of them is going to win this. Andrew Luck is probably going to win the Heisman Trophy because he's projected to be the number one pick. Everybody's golden boy. Would I take him number one in the draft, in the NFL draft? Absolutely. Because I think that in the future that he has the biggest upside. But that does not mean he had the best year in 2011 college football season. That does not mean he had the best year or he's deserving of winning the Heisman Trophy. One big game I saw Andrew Luck in, Oregon, he was not very good. He threw 2 interceptions. They lost 53-30, and he had 256, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. He was okay. He had his other big games was against mediocre competition. Now I understand he's a great player, but it goes to the player who had the best year. It doesn't go to the best player in college football. It goes to the player who had the best year. So that to me, that's what I'm saying. That is. The Heisman needs to have a clear definition of what the award is and why are you giving this particular player the award based on what? And I haven't seen that out of the Heisman throughout the course of his history. 347-215-6180 is your call number. This is the Saturday morning wake up call. We're certainly glad to be back after a three week hiatus. You can also follow me at twitter.com/WilliamGerald. catch the best of the Saturday morning wake up call at CyrilGeraldQuinn.com. When we return, we will talk about the week that was in Major League Baseball, an eventful week to say the least. That's coming up and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. We'll be right back.
In charming town, they call the rising sun. It's been the ruin of many a poor girl. And oh God, I'm one. If I listen to my mama, Lord, I'll be home today. But I was young and foolish, and some rider led me astray. Go tell my baby sister, never do what I've done. Sister of the house in Charming Town, we call the ransom. My mother, she's a tailor. She sold my new blue jeans.
18 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour in this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, as we discuss the world of sports. Great season finale to the Sons of Anarchy. If you're a Sons of Anarchy fan, that was carried. Definitely can't wait till season 5 starts. Jax taking over the reins of president of the club. So certainly that's a show that I love, and it has some great music as well. 347-215-6180 is your call number. While the Lakers were losing Chris Paul for now, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim were gaining the game's greatest player in Albert Pujols in a deal that basically, if you read all the reports, in a deal that basically happened in 24 hours. I mean, Pujols, everybody thought that Pujols was either going to go back to St. Louis or sign with the Miami Marlins. St. Louis puts his foot down, says, hey, we're not going above $210 million, and we're not going more than, we're not guaranteeing you 10 years. We're giving you 9 years, 10th year as an option. That killed the deal. That killed it for Pujols. The Miami Marlins offered the most money at $275 million for 10 years, but would not grant Pujols the no trade clause. No trade clause, which he wanted. So, and the mystery team, and I believe the Cubs were up there as well, but yeah, Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, give them credit. They stepped up with the deal, $254 million, 10 years, and most importantly, gave Pujols that no trade clause. And listen, I kind of, you know, when Pujols comes out and says, my heart went towards Anaheim, or went towards the Angels, normally you would say, whatever, $254 million didn't hurt. But I kind of got to believe him. I would believe that wholeheartedly if he would have turned down $275 million from Miami plus the no-trade clause. If the Marlins offer Pujols that no-trade clause, Pujols would be a Miami Marlin right now, bottom line. I don't see him leaving $23 million, $21 million on the table. And possibly $300 million when you take into account Florida doesn't have state tax and the incentives. It was an incentive laden contract as well. No deferred money. Incentive that he could have made $300 million with the Miami Marlins. But the problem is, again, they did not want to grant him the no trade clause. And you know, my thought from a St. Louis perspective, I absolutely agree wholeheartedly with how the Cardinals went about this. Pujols, when the season starts, will be 32 years old. Okay? Before Albert Pujols ever got to the St. Louis Cardinals, they had 9 world championships. Now, I understand the fact that you want to say, listen, with him, they won 2 World Series, and went to 3, losing to the Red Sox in 2004. And they hadn't won one since, 1985. It's a fair point, and it's a very fair point. But let's not lose sight of what this franchise is. And, no one man is bigger than a franchise in baseball. I mean, maybe in basketball, Jordan bigger than the Bulls and what have you. But in baseball, you got to have the pitching as well. Cardinals are a great organization. They had 2 big losses, losing Pujols and Tony La Russa, but they have Adam Wainwright coming back next year. He's a guy who could be one of the best pitchers in baseball. They have some young talent, the Freeze and Alan Craig. Cardinals will be fine. I absolutely cannot knock the Cardinals for how they handle Albert Pujols. I myself would not want to give him 10 years guaranteed, especially 10 years with a no trade clause. Miami, on the other hand, listen, if you're going to offer the guy 10 years, $275 million, you might as well give him the no-trade clause. I mean, if you're going to go that far, you might as well go all in. I mean, to me, that's just dumb. That's just dumb on their part. To go that far into negotiations, offer him that amount of money, but not give him a trade clause. So you're telling me you're going to guarantee the guy 10 years and then say, well, maybe, we don't want to grant you at no trade clause, because there might be a chance that you can fall off in, say, year number 6 or 7 of that deal. In that case, don't guarantee him the 10 years. So I don't understand what the Marlins were thinking with that. Whole ordeal. And I don't want to hear about the whole, standard operational procedure. We don't give guys no trade clauses. Listen, this is Albert Pujols. You've never had a player the magnitude of Albert Pujols. Okay. Now they have a great lineup even without Pujols. They did sign Mark Burley. They have some nice pitching. They got Reyes. So they improved to their team. But to go that far and not get Pujols didn't make much sense to me. If I'm a fan of the Miami Marlins, again, I give the Angels all the credit in the world. The Angels needed to upgrade their lineup. Pujols makes everybody in that lineup better. It is a written, but the biggest to me, even the more important signing than Pujols to the him going to the Angels is C.J. Wilson going to the Angels. C.J. Wilson, they already have one of the best pitching staffs in the American League with Herron, Jarrett Weaver, and Ervin Santana. You plug C.J. Wilson in that mix, and already a strong bullpen. It's one of the top pitching staffs in all of baseball. I don't know where C.J. Wilson will. I'm assuming that he will probably be third behind Weaver and Herron. Weaver, Herron, Wilson, and Ervin Santana. I mean, that is as good of a 4-man rotation as there is in the American League, easily. So I love that. Did they overpay for Pujols, $250 million, 2 years? Yes, but you know what? He's going to instantly make their lineup better, and they had to make Artie Moreno is a guy who has money to spend. He had to make a big splash in that LA market, in that LA market, and he has the money. Let's be honest with you, he has the money to make those moves. Getting those two guys instantly puts them toe to toe with the Texas Rangers. Rangers have better, still have a better lineup, but I think the Angels have better pitching myself. And normally 9 times out of 10, it is the pitching that gets it done. you know, that gets it done when you're trying to win baseball games, win a World Series, win a division. So I don't blame St. Louis for what they did. Miami, again, dropped the ball, for all I'm concerned, with Pujols. And I give the Angels a lot of credit, though. You know, these big, ridiculous contracts, $200 million contracts, $100 million contracts, have not worked out for the likes of, say, you know, Kevin Browns of the world and guys like that in terms of players' production going down. But, again, Pujols has done at least, I think, 5 years at top level where he will be either the best player in baseball or at near top, close to being the best player in baseball. So, you know, you try to win a championship in the next 4 or 5 years, and that the back end of that contract, you're going to pay for it. That's all there is to it. And you just rebuild your club and just stock it with pitching. I mean, the New York Yankees are finding out the hard way with Alex Rodriguez. As far as, you know, listen, a guy at 30, when a guy gets 36, 37, 38, his production is going to drop off. So we'll see what happens with that. But Albert Pujols, you know, certainly is a Los Angeles Angel. This is a Los Angeles Angel, and again, they are now right there amongst the teams to beat, not only in that division, but in all of the American League. Still to come on this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, we will have the Fantasy Focus. Still have week 14 NFL picks. Mark Melusis will join the program at about 12:50 or so to discuss the goings on in the New York baseball market with the Mets and Yankees. Certainly, we'll try to, you know, get his insight on the Bernie Fine situation out of Syracuse as well. So we'll talk about that and much, much more on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. After the 12 o'clock hour on this late edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 347-215-6180 is your call number. Who to sit, who to start? It is a week 14 in terms of fantasy football. Playoffs will be starting in most leagues, I would think, next week. Right now, I stand at 7-6. I'm basically in the playoffs. The next closest guy would have to, obviously, you know, we have to win. I would have to lose this week. You have to win. Also, you have to beat me by. You have to score. You have to get about 300 points because I'm up about 250 points on them. So I'm basically in the playoffs in my paid league. My non-paid. This is the funny thing about being a non-paid league versus a paid league. My non-paid league, I'm in first place and I've barely paid attention. I mean, I already had Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, Steven Jackson, Darren Sproles. I have a good team. I had Macklin in my lineup the last 3 weeks, and he hasn't played. So there's a big difference between paid and non-paid, how much attention goes towards your towards when you have some money on the table. If I'm starting a team right now, and, you know, at the wide receiver position, one guy that I would point to as far as somebody who you certainly can get off the waiver wire, that's not a big name, Deion Branch. Branch, I think, is going to have a big day against the Redskins. Redskins secondary is suspect as it is. Take LeRon Landry out. That certainly doesn't doesn't help bode well for the Redskins. Plus, I think the Redskins defensively will focus in on the two tight ends with Hernandez and Gronkowski, and that will open up things for Deion Branch. Remember, outside of Welker and Gronkowski, Deion Branch has been the Patriots' most targeted, has been Tom Brady's most targeted receiver. So keep that in mind. He's had a sneaky good season. I think he has at least four touchdowns. Maybe he might even have more, four or five touchdowns. So he comes out with those games where you don't expect much, and then he gets you 10 or 11 points. He's had a pretty good season. He really has. So I will be starting him, and I will advise you to do the same if you need a third receiver on your team. At quarterback, and this pains me because this guy killed me the first 10 weeks of the season before I had to trade him. But right now, you have to start him if you need a quarterback or if he's on your team. Phillip Rivers. Rivers had a big game against Jacksonville. Now they play the Buffalo Bills. Buffalo's defense is awful. San Diego got Malcolm Floyd back. Their offense seems to be clicking a little bit with the running game. Ryan Matthews has played well. Gates has played very well. So I can see San Diego offensively getting a little hot here down the stretch, and certainly now is the time to start Rivers and to take advantage of that. You're looking for a defense to start. You have to go to Denver, and Denver as they take on the Chicago Bears. I don't know how Chicago is going to do anything against Denver's defense. Chicago, no Matt Forte. You have no Jay Cutler. I don't know how they're going to get points. Denver's defense has played well. They've been forcing turnovers. Amazingly, Minnesota scored 32 points. I'm still trying to figure out how that happened, considering who they had missing during that game with no AJ Peterson and starting rookie quarterback. But Denver, despite that, Denver got 14 points last week because they had a pick six, fumble recovery, couple turnovers. You definitely have to start Denver's defense against the Chicago Bears right now. Who to sit? This is easy for me. Beanie Wells, who has played extremely well over the past couple of weeks, had a 200-yard game a couple of weeks ago, but he's going up against a San Francisco defense that is just flat out nasty. Number one ranked run defense in the league. They only give about 71 yards rushing a game. Easy sit. Quarterback Tim Tebow, I would not play him, though he's been productive. Would not play him against that Chicago Bear defense. Chicago Bears, they have some good linebackers with Briggs and of course Urlacher. They do the cover the Tampa 2, but they force you to be patient. Tebow, I think Denver's going to struggle offensively in this game. I don't think that they will be able to run against Chicago. And I would sit Tebow if I had an option that was equal to Tebow. I would sit him this particular game. And the Dallas defense. I was on Dallas' defense for a long time. I probably rode it too long, to be honest with you. They go against the Giants. Giants are going to make some big plays. Giants move the ball just about on any and everybody. Now, does it always come out to points? No, the points don't really equate all the time. But Eli Manning's having a huge year. Amon Bradshaw is only going to get healthier. I would sit the Dallas defense. Their pass rush is basically made up of one man, and that is DeMarcus Ware. If you can somewhat neutralize him, then you will be in good shape to kind of calm down that Dallas pass rush. So I would start Deion Branch, start Phillip Rivers, start the Denver defense, sit Tim Tebow, sit Beanie Wells, and also sit the Dallas defense. Those are your fantasy picks for a week number 14 in a league where no contract is guaranteed. When we return, we will have NFL picks in a league where no contract is guaranteed for week 14. We'll be right back with those 36 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour. This is the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back. in the league where no contract is guaranteed. Christmas carols and snowflakes abound in this month of December. It's the money month of the NFL season, where contenders become contenders and the Cowboys choke. I had to throw it in. I hate the Cowboys. Game number one, Houston travels to Cincinnati to take on the Bengals. Big game. Both these teams are in a mix for the playoff run. Houston in great shape at 9-3. Cincinnati trying to keep up with the Jets at 7-5. A host of teams are at 7-5. They include the Oakland Raiders and Denver Broncos, just to name a few. Now, Cincinnati, again, at home, three-point favorite, going up against a Houston team that has been as resourceful as any team in the league, considering the injuries. Think about this. Matt Schaub, gone. Mario Williams, gone. But yet, Houston finds a way. Matt Leiner, out. They are starting a rookie quarterback in the middle of a playoff race, T.J. Yates. Cincinnati, you know, they've played the big boys tough in the Baltimores and Pittsburghs in all three of those games, but the problem is they have nothing to show for it. They're 0-3. I think this will be a defensive game. Carlos Dunlap will be out for Cincinnati. That will not help. I expect this game to be very close late in the fourth quarter. I'm taking Houston on the road. I think Houston, with that running attack of Foster and Ben Tate, that will be enough to get them over the top against Cincinnati. I know Cincinnati has played well at home, but again, they have been struggling lately. They've been struggling with turnovers. And again, I think Arian Foster, Ben Tate combination, and Houston's defense, which has been the best. To me, I mean, San Francisco's played great defense, but to me, from start to finish, Houston has been the best defensive team in all of football. Amazingly. Their pass defense is great. Nobody runs against them. So I will take Houston 20-16. Also, from an injury perspective, no Andre Johnson in this game for the Texans. Game number two, must-win game for the New York football Jets. They are at 7-5, coming off a win against the Washington Redskins. Kansas City, which has had a strange season, to say the least, is at 5-7. Jets are a 10.5-point favorite. Now, that number jumped out to me because I said the Jets only score a lot of points, and they're a 10.5-point favorite. Kansas City, three out of the last four games, has played great defense. The one game where they didn't play great defense, it was Tom Brady and Wes Welker. So, you know, I'll give them that one. Kansas City's defense against the Jet offense, I think, is a good matchup. Jets have struggled to score points over the course of this season. Though I don't think Kansas City will win this game, I do like them to cover. 10.5 points is too bad. That's just too many points. You can't get double digits in points for an offense that struggles. You know, the Patriots last week were favored by 21 over the Indianapolis Colts, and I would have took those points, and the Patriots scored 30 a game. That's just too many points. I mean, 10.5 points is just a ridiculous amount of points. Too many. I like the Jets to win 20-13, but certainly I'd like Kansas City to cover in that particular game. Game number three, Chicago travels to Denver. Both teams are at 7-5. Denver is leading their division right now. Chicago is hanging on by a thread as far as trying to make the playoffs. Right now, they would be in the playoffs right now if the playoffs were to start. They would be in, but they are hanging on by a thread. I don't know what Chicago is doing with the quarterback situation or why they haven't signed a quarterback, but Kyle Haney has been awful. And, you know, since Cutler got hurt, now they lose Forte against Kansas City. I don't know where Chicago's going to get points from, to be honest with you, in terms of offensively. But I think this is a good matchup for the Bears because they're playing a Denver team that can only beat you with through one dude. They can only beat you from an offensive standpoint with the running game. I think Chicago will shut down Tim Tebow. Denver's favored by 3.5 points, which is understandable. They're playing at Denver. I think Chicago will shut down Tim Tebow. I think Devin Hester will have a big return to give Chicago either for a touchdown or to give Chicago a great field position. And then Chicago's defense will create a couple of turnovers that will allow them short fields. I like Chicago in this game, 14-10. It is a gut pick. Will not be a big upset, but even without 14 Cutler, will not be a big upset. But I just like the matchup with Chicago's defense versus that Denver offense. Game of the week, final game, Giants at Dallas. Giants basically, just still a cliche in a must-win situation if they want to either make the playoffs or win the division. And more importantly, if they want to make the playoffs. If the Giants could ever get this game, that would put them in a nice position, considering that they will have Dallas at home in a couple of weeks. Dallas 7-5, Giants at 6-6. Giants have played extremely well against the Cowboys at Cowboys Stadium. They beat the Cowboys the last 2 years at Cowboys Stadium. They have won 3 out of the last 4 games against the Cowboys. Again, Dallas, you wonder which Dallas team is going to show up. The team that, ran through Buffalo, or the team that, sleptwalked through the Arizona game and ended up losing. I like the Giants in this game. I just don't trust the Cowboys in December. I know both of these teams have a history of collapsing late in the season and having bad second halves. Dallas in December just doesn't mix. I mean, somebody should just change all the calendars in the Cowboys facilities and change them to November, especially Tony Romo, because they just can't function in December. That was a horrible loss they had against Arizona. I like the Giants in this game. I think the Giants loss to Green Bay is going to propel them to possibly make a late season run at a playoff spot. I'll take the Giants 28-24. So there you go. Houston over Cincinnati, despite the fact that Cincinnati is favored. I'll take Kansas City with the points, though I think the Jets will win the game. Too many points at 10.5. Chicago with the outright upset, if you want to call it that. It wouldn't be an amazing one, but as far as Denver is favored, take Chicago over Denver and the Giants for the third straight year, defeat Dallas in Dallas. So there are your week 14 picks in the league where no contract is guaranteed. When we return, again, 12:50, we'll have Mark Malusis on. We'll be right back on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. 48 minutes after the 12 o'clock hour, this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Of course, we will have Mark Malusis on the program in a couple of minutes as we discuss the world of sports. The poll question of the morning was, if you are a Packers fan, would you want the Packers to go 16-0 going into the playoffs, being undefeated, joining the 2007 New England Patriots as the only two teams to ever go 16-0. Of course, when the Dolphins played, it was a 14-game season. And, history is great. You know, when records are broken, when history is made, as sports fans, we all love it. It is a aspect of sports that helps make sports what it is. But I don't think you want to be 16-0 going into the playoffs. Now, does this mean you take your foot off the gas if you're the Packers and don't go for it? No, I didn't say that. That, to me, that strategy has not worked. I hate that strategy. The Colts have done it twice, and it has worked out neither time for them. Hasn't worked out at all. 2009, when they did it, it didn't work out. It didn't work out, and they end up not winning a championship. I believe you go for it. You know, it worked out for the Saints, even though they lost their last three games, whatever, when they started out, got off to a fast start, they still won the championship. I believe you go for it. You know, everybody else talks about New England. Listen, New England was 1 minute away from being 19-0. I mean, the Giants didn't blow them out. You know, they were 19, they were 18-0 and had a lead. It took a miraculous catch from David Tyree on a crazy play for the Giants, and it took a all world defensive performance from the New York Giants in order for them to beat the New England Patriots. But I don't believe that, as we now will be joined by Mark Malusis. How you doing, Mark?
Cheryl, what's going on, man? How are you?
I'm fine. Hope you're enjoying your holiday season. Got any Christmas shopping done?
No, nothing yet, unfortunately. How about yourself?
A couple things. I was telling my audience, I've done the online route, so that's going to be about 99% of my Christmas shopping is going to be done online. Gotten lazy.
Yeah, that's smart. That's smart. Why deal with the lines, the hassle, the parking lot, everybody killing you over a spot? I mean, that's smart. That's a good call, Cheryl.
Yeah. I had to. I mean, I didn't do it. Like, I haven't done it in recent years, but I didn't do Black Friday this year. I don't have the patience. The lines are just crazy. Even as an economy, the lines are just nuts.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. That's why I put it off to the last possible second.
Yeah. That's what men do. That's what we do. Mark, before we get to the New York aspect of the baseball of the baseball hot stove, just give me your initial reaction from what transpired with Albert Pujols and that whole just crazy situation. It was, I had him penciled in as either going to Miami or back to St. Louis. Did you see this coming with the Angels pulled off?
I mean, I didn't see the Angels. I mean, they're always a threat to do a lot because, Artie Moreno has a lot of money to spend. But, I didn't think that they would land Albert Pujols and come up with a $254 million contract. But with that being said, I can't fault Albert for leaving St. Louis and, turning down, that kind of contract when he has the ability to make, an extra $50-plus million. I mean, that's a lot of money. And I think it improves that Angels offense dramatically. I don't think there's any question about that. They add Wilson as well. To go with their top three starters of Weaver, Haran, and Santana, I mean, as good of a manager as there is in the sport in Socha, and the Angels, with the Rangers being weakened, are as good as right now on paper, as good as the Yankees, the Red Sox, any team in that American League.
Yeah, the only problem I have with Pujols is, he comes out a couple of months ago, not a couple of months, maybe like a year ago, he's on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and he's like, please believe me in terms of not using steroids. So he kind of has a squeaky clean image, so to speak. I know he does a lot of charitable work, and he's beloved, or was beloved, in St. Louis with some of his foundations and things of that nature. But don't come out and say, my heart was tugging, and the Angels, I was pulled towards the Angels. The bottom line is, had Miami signed off on the no trade clause, the no trade clause, he would have been in Miami for $275 million.
Yeah, you know, you're probably right about that. I mean, I take everything what they say afterward with you know, a grain of salt. It's always about the money. Players and, you know, people who have the ability to sign that kind of contract are going to say it's never about the money. I mean, it's always about the money. That's really what it comes down to. They offered him a boatload of money. They gave him the terms of the contract that he wanted. St. Louis offered the most that they could offer as an organization, and he took the money and ran. And it is what it is. I don't think it has anything to do with loyalty. He gave the Cardinals organization 11 great years. I think it just comes down to cash.
Yeah, I have no problem with the Cardinals. I mean, listen, I said on the show, the Cardinals won 9 championships as an organization before him. They won 2 with him, which are another World Series where they lost to the Red Sox. So I can understand it from his perspective. I can understand it from their perspective. I have no problem with that. The problem I do have, Mark, is with the Miami Marlins in terms of how they went about it. If you're going to give him 10 years, $275 million, why not give him the no trade, the full no trade clause? To me, if you're going to go that far, I mean, 10 years, $275 million, you might as well have just went all the way.
Well, I agree with you there, but I think what they're afraid of is, you know, Pujols, 32 years of age, what he's going to be on the back end of the deal. Does he become a guy who can, you know, is going to need to lean on the DH, which he's going to have the possibility of doing now with the Angels later on in his career? And I also think about the fandom down there. You know, they have a new ballpark. They signed Reyes. They signed Mark Burley. But baseball is not in the blood of Florida sports fans. It's not. Football is. And we'll see how long that stadium does take as far as packing in the fans and the interest in the Marlins. But I think that's their fear also. I mean, this is an organization historically, you know, that won a World Series and tore their entire team apart. So we've seen it before with that Miami Marlins now organization. So I think that's why they didn't want to give them the no trade.
We're talking to Mark Malusis on the Saturday morning wake up call program. To my audience, it's only about 3 or 4 minutes left in the program, but certainly you can, as we're going to do some overtime here, no question, you can go in, re-log in to the program if you want to listen to the archive version of this particular spot with Mark Malusis. So to my listening audience out there in Blog Talk Radio land, Mark, how about the Yankees? Very quiet off-season free agency with the Yankees. I read a lot of things in terms of, you know, they're trying to have their payroll, so they're trying to cut payroll. Well, I shouldn't say cut. That's not a good word to use with the Yankees, but trying to trim their payroll a bit by 2014. Are the Yankees serious about this, or is this a case of they're just not that big-time free agent that they actually wanted? So now let's try to trim the payroll a bit. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's more to do with it than anything else, is there is not that guy out there that they feel comfortable spending that kind of money, and the money that they have locked into players already. I mean, they're already, you know, locked into an A.J. Burnett, who is not going anywhere, even though they want to try and get rid of him and eat $8 million of, you know, the $33 million that's left on his contract. But, you know, that's not going to be good enough, Cyril. And I think when you look at the Yankees long term, I think they're going to always be a high spender. I think they've got a lot of money on the books locked into older players like an Alex Rodriguez, like a Derek Jeter. But I think there's going to continue to still be major players down the line. I don't think there's any question about that.
You bring it up. A.J. Burnett, a lot of talk about him being on the market and the Yankees willing to field offers for him. Is there a market for A.J. Burnett from what you've heard?
I don't think there is, no. I don't think there's a team out there that's willing to give Burnett anything. Would look for next to nothing in return. But I think what it comes down to is what's left on that contract. And how are you, if you're an organization, you look at A.J. Burnett. He's 121 and 111 for his career, pitches to a 4.6 ERA. You're still on the hook for $30-plus million. Is a 500 pitcher for the Yankees, most part. A team that goes out there and wins 93-plus games every single year. what leads you to believe that A.J. Burnett's all of a sudden going to be a better pitcher with your team? That's not an investment. It was a bad investment by the Yankees initially. That's not an investment. If I'm another team, I'd look at bringing in A.J. Burnett and say, you know what, I have my answer. Plus, he's in his mid-30s. He is what he is at this stage of his career.
Yeah, the Yankees, I think the Yankees were just hoping to get lucky in terms of putting him on the market and hoping, you know, there's always one. The old saying is it only takes one, but in this case, I don't see that one. I don't see anybody, especially with these economics, going after A.J. Burnett. Do you expect the Yankees in the next couple of weeks or going into the winter to make a big trade?
You know what? I don't know about a big trade. I mean, I think they're going to...
Or a trade. A significant trade, I should say.
Yeah, I mean, I think they could make a trade. You know, I'm not a big believer in Swisher as being an answer for this team. You know, I think they need to improve right field. I don't think they're going to do that. You know, I would look at a Carlos Beltran, who seems like the market has dried up a little bit. You know, I think Brian Cashman's still going to go out there and still do his due diligence as far as pitchers are concerned. You know, whether it be a Jair Jurgens with Atlanta, whether it be a Gio Gonzalez with the Oakland Athletics. I think those are the guys that he's going to look at because right now you have to pay a king's ransom for them. And I think if it comes down to where it's a little bit of a fair trade or it's a deal that the Yankees feel is worth the risk, then they're going to do it. But by no means do I think the Yankees right now feel like giving up Jesus Montero and Dylan Betances for Gio Gonzalez would be a good deal for them.
So there basically is no player on the market right now that the Yankees would be willing to give up, you know, to give up one of those prospects, whether it be a Montero or the Killer Bees in terms of the pitchers. So is that player out there or that player doesn't exist right now?
I mean, listen, if it was one for one, Jesus Montero for Jurgens or Gio Gonzalez, I think the Yankees would probably make that move. I mean, I do. Or if they wanted Dylan Betances. But I don't think the Yankees are going to give up one of the Killer Bees and more for a player, you know, of that quality. They're not going to give up Betances and Montero or Montero and Manny Benuelos. I don't think they're going to do that. I think they'd give up another prospect, but as far as their upper echelon guys, I think they'd give up one and a, you know, a minor level prospect for a pitcher of that ilk, of that quality, but I don't think they're going to give up two of them.
How about this shortstop that they've been that they won the posting for, the Nakajima? What do you know about him? What are their thoughts on what he can do?
I mean, I think he's a guy that they think can step in and be a backup shortstop for Derek Jeter. I mean, you look at, I think, 20-plus home runs last 3 years over in the Japanese League. They won the posting, exclusive negotiating posting rights for him. But, I mean, reportedly, you know, he might be a little bit too rich for their blood. He might go back to Japan. So, I mean, I don't really know a lot about him other than what I read about him. I mean, I think the Yankees feel like he's got some upside to him and feels like he's a finished product or a polished product that could probably help him sooner rather than later. But right now, I'm not sure if the Yankees are going to be able to get him under contract.
I was a little confused because I don't know the exact protocol in terms of how this works in regards to of the, you know, how of the posting and the bidding for guys. We saw the Red Sox with, a few years back with Dice K. But I'm, you know, Dice K was projected to be, you know, everybody hyped him up that he was going to be the next great pitcher in baseball. So I understood, you know, people making bids on him, even though that didn't work out for the Red Sox. This guy, I mean, the Yankees are projecting him to basically be a utility infielder. I'm like, there was a posting for this guy where people were actually, you know, taking bids on him. Maybe is that just standard procedure for all players, no matter what their skill set level is?
Yeah, I think that's the case, yeah, because then you have to – because I think he's still under contract over in Japan, so they throw him up as far as, you know, that they put their rights up, so you have to bid whatever the amount of money it is to pay that team in order to take him and get out, you know, and that contract off their hands, or the, you know, take him away from the Japanese league. So I believe that works for all players, no matter – how much quality or how good they are, how bad they are.
Okay, we're gonna do the inevitable. We'll have to shift here towards the Mets, unfortunately. But first of all, are the Mets getting killed in New York for not getting more than a draft pick for Jose Reyes?
Yeah, I think to a degree they are. I mean, I think that's the issue you have. If you were not going to go above and beyond to bring Reyes back, I don't think there's any reason why you had to keep him with the team last year. I mean, the Mets were not winning anything last year, regardless. And Jose Reyes at times last year before the hamstring injuries reared their ugly head once again was playing like an MVP serial in the National League. There's no question about it.
Oh, he was one of the best players in baseball last year.
Yeah, I mean, for a long stretch of time at the start of the year, I mean, he was unbelievable. Eventually wins the batting title. But, I mean, you mean to tell me you keep Jose Reyes around to try and, you know, satisfy the fans for 1 year, but don't go out there and do every single possible thing you want to sign them and bring them back? I mean, that to me makes absolutely no sense. And you can talk about the draft choices. You can talk about different things all you want. The fact is that I think that's a major – not a major. I think that's a hit to Sandy Alderson in this regime. You know, they should have just went out there and traded them last year like they did with Frankie Rodriguez and Carlos Beltran instead of playing this game. And you knew Reyes was going to get $100-plus million. You knew Reyes was looking for a bigger contract. His initial contract extension that he signed with the Mets was for the cheap. He didn't feel like it was a good deal for him. He signed it. He owed up to it. He played with it. He didn't balk at it. You know, there's issues to Reyes as far as his health goes, but he's still a 28-year-old shortstop who is a very good defensive player, and he knew he was going to attract some interest, and all there had to be was one other team. And there wasn't a ton of action for Jose Reyes, but there was enough, and it was Florida and Miami now who gave him $111 million.
I never thought, and obviously I'm not in New York, but not in that area anymore, but I never got the sense that the Mets were serious about trying to re-sign him. I just didn't see it.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't – you know what's interesting? I think Alderson took over that organization. I think he had an opinion about Reyes, and I don't think he wanted Reyes long-term. And I think the first half last year probably swayed him a little bit. And he even admitted in an article, I think it was in the Daily News or the Post, where he said that, you know, things have changed, or, you know, making reference to maybe the opinion as far as Jose changed. I think if you know Jose Reyes and you know baseball, and Alderson worked in the, you know, baseball offices under Bud Selig before he became the GM of the Mets, you knew what Reyes was. And no matter what he did in the first half last year, you should have circled Reyes and had a good opinion as far as whether or not he was an answer or he wasn't. I think you should have stuck to your guns. And if you didn't feel like he was an answer, or he's not a guy that you thought was worth investing in, then I think you should have traded him.
What is the direction of the Mets right now? I'm kind of confused about where they're going come 2012, what they're trying to sell to their fans. I know they make the move to bolster their bullpen with Ramon Ramirez and Frank Francisco. I understand that. Those are, you know, and they definitely need some bullpen help. But overall, is there a sense of where the Mets are going, or are you, being in New York, being there, still trying to figure that out?
Well, I mean, listen, I think the Mets next year hope to be competitive. I mean, I think that's what they're looking at. You know, they got a major question mark to answer with Johan Santana, whether or not he's going to come back and be healthy and be able to stay healthy for the entire season and get over the arm issues that he's had the past couple of years. You know, you got Ike Davis, you got Wright. You hope bringing the fences in changes the dimensions of that ballpark, makes Wright more of a power player, as does it do with a Jason Bay, who you can't go out there and trade or dump on anybody. Nobody's going to take Bay off your hands. But as far as the direction goes, I think they're looking at a long-term success process here. You know, you got Harvey and Zach Wheeler down on the farm. You got Familia as well. You got three power arms at the organization, and baseball is very high on. You know, you're going to try and build through those three arms long term. You know, add some pieces here and there. Get yourself back to relevancy. Get yourself back to being a primetime contender each and every year. You know, and they've had to cut payroll. We know Bernie Madoff and the financial situation has had an effect, and how could it not? On the Wilpons and what they want, of what they can do with their baseball team, but I think that's the approach for Sandy Alderson right now, is to go out there and get better or improve each. every year and figure out who you feel is the long-term solution, who's a problem, answers and such. I mean, you know, you don't want to go out there and paint everything as roses when it's not. I mean, you got to deal with reality here. Reality of the situation is the Marlins have gotten better. The Braves, despite their collapse, are still the Braves. You still have the Philadelphia Phillies. The Nats are going to be improved. I mean, the Mets are probably next year, unless other things break, are going to probably be battling for the seller spot in the National League East.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, no question about it. One last thing from you. Obviously, you went to Syracuse. It's certainly a closer program as far as how, you following it. What were your, thoughts overall on the Bernie Fine situation?
Well, I mean, I think it's different than Penn State, Cyril. I mean, I don't think it has the same smell or hang up a cover-up like you had out there in Happy Valley. I think you look at it, I think it's, you know, your thoughts and prayers go out to, obviously, Bobby Davis. You know, there's three accusers, I believe, at this point in time, as far as Bobby Davis, and really to all of those that are victims of sexual abuse. But it's, you know, it's a knock on Boeheim. It's a knock a little bit on that Syracuse program. It tells you that, you know, you never really know what people are all about, even if you work with them for 30 or 40 years. You never know what people are really all about. But I don't compare it as far as a paternal situation with Penn State. I really don't. I don't think it's as Jim Boeheim is Joe Paterno. I don't think he knew anything that was going on. But we'll have to see as far as how that entire process plays out. It can't, you know, go after him on the state level, fine, that is, because of statute of limitations. We'll see if the federal government does pick it up and continue this case against, you know, against Bernie, the longtime Syracuse assistant. But it's really a sad and tragic story on a lot of different levels, but most importantly for those that were victimized.
Yeah, I don't hold Boeheim nowhere near as culpable as I do Joe Paterno, but I will say this. If you're Jim Boeheim and you have two sets of investigations come out, one in 2002, the other one in 2005, I believe, when the second one comes out, then I would have to start almost, you know, being responsible for that program, have to start really thinking, like, you know, there might be something here. I don't think he could have prevented it, but I just thought that he could have did a little bit more. It should have been a little bit more, like, cognizant as far as when that second investigation broke in 2005. The first one, fine, gets cleared, whatever, but the second one, I think you know, Boeheim's antenna should have went up after the second one. That's just my opinion.
That's fair. I mean, I don't know what he did and what he didn't do. He said some things in his press conferences. You know, when the police or the university investigate it and they don't follow it through, you know, it leads you to believe that there's nothing to it. That's probably why he didn't do anything about it. Now, I'm just assuming there. I don't really know. I agree with you. I don't think he's as culpable as Joe Paterno goes. And I think you look at it, is it a knock on Jim Boeheim? Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's going to be something that is going to be linked to his name. But unlike Paterno, whose name is completely ruined, I don't think Boeheim's name is ruined to that degree.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It is amazing, Mark, you know, with the whole Penn State thing happening, now it seems like every other week or at least once a week, some type of sexual case is being involved in sports. I mean, you got Bobby Dodd, you know, yesterday with that being announced, the Red Sox thing with their organization. It's amazing how this has just opened up starting with the Penn State situation.
Yeah, well, it's giving victims strength. I mean, I think that's it. I mean, I think it's those who maybe it felt like they had no voice or felt, you know, helpless to the situation. Some, I'm sure, just buried it and didn't want to think about it. That didn't have a fight. I think the Penn State situation, you know, strengthened those victims across this country in different instances to come out and tell their story and maybe hopefully begin the healing process and everything and the like. So, you know, if there's any good that came out of this, It's that, you know, those that were victimized are able to feel empowered enough to be able to speak up and, you know, to bring, you know, those other, you know, let's be honest, I mean, you know, and those other pedophiles to, you know, to justice.
Yeah, yeah, no question. Mark, as always, has been great. Thank you for coming on, and you enjoy the rest of your holiday season.
Cyril, my pleasure, man. I'm sorry I couldn't come on earlier. Have yourself a good holidays, and good luck shopping online, all right?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, you too.
All right, man. Be well.
All right, take it easy. That, of course, is Mark Melusis, as always, giving us great information from a New Jersey, New York perspective. I definitely agree with him as far as, you know, with the victims coming out. All these victims coming out because of the Penn State situation, certainly the accusers, if they're guilty, definitely should be brought definitely to justice. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Again, you can catch the entire program on blogtalkradio.com/SyrilQuinn. I will attempt to either have the NBA, my NBA opening, or the interview I just did with Mark Melusis recorded and put on SyrilQuinn.com as soon as possible. So be on the lookout for that. Have a great weekend. Have a great weekend and enjoy the games tomorrow. We will see you tomorrow on the NFL Wrap-Up Show.